Hey, welcome to Info Under the Radar, the show where we talk with an expert to simplify everyday ideas, concepts, and subjects that surround us.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Info Under the Radar. I'm your host, Vishwajit.
And I'm Devendra.
And today we are talking again about personal identity. This is part two of our series on, or mini series on identity. And in our first part, we already touched upon how language can have an impact on identity. We already received some feedback on how some of you see that. That's very interesting. If you are finding any of those discussions intriguing and have some personal anecdotes to share with us, please do that on our social media. And then we also touched upon the aspect of racial identity, how it can be defined by some very strong incidents which can happen in one's life. And today we are taking a step back from rather stronger identity, in lack of better words. What I mean by that is there are certain identities which are very strong for people based on things they cannot even control. So for example, case in point, race, it can be even religion for many people, or sexuality and things like that. But today we are talking about a lot of us, or majority of people, I guess, who might be listening to it, who might not have the stronger association with identity. And there it's more about exploration of identity.
We are trying to come closer to like the middle of the bell curve, more or less, so that we can cover a rather wider audience, or rather relatability of a wider audience. So as you mentioned, if you haven't checked out our first episode, it's not like a sequence that you have to do that to understand this one, but that would be great if you get context from there, listen to that, and come back here again. Understand how, if we go a little bit away from what the median of the population is about their understanding in a different environment of language and in a different racial world when you grow very heterogeneously, that's part one. Now, part two is where you'll find some relatability. At least that was the intent. This part was particularly made with the intent to convey the idea that figuring out things is like the default setting or mode for most people in life. And we try to get an expert's opinion on that what insights could we get out of someone who has studied this in hundreds of people in that regard. We talked about one's relationship with their work or their professional identity in some sense. We also talked about how could one not so concretely define their relationship with God or their idea of a religion. Mm-hmm. And what happens when you're not just the first generation who thinks they are atheist or agnostic, like which is most of us, if you're in your 20s or late teens, then it's kind of a trend to like, okay, I don't follow any religion. But what if you're not the first one? What if your parents have done that and their parents have done that too? Mm. So how does your identity shape now? So we talked about that as well.
Then we also touch upon how, especially if you are in late 20s or your early 30s, then maybe you are even thinking about your future generations, which some people are. And we also hear a story where you will hear that how we actually consciously or subconsciously do define identities of our future generation, especially if we are not having a partner who is exactly like you, meaning who looks like you are coming from same race, etc., which is a very interesting story in this case, where we are discussing about how an identity of an interracial child in future can look like.
So this discussion would start also with a bit of a primer on alleviating a common confusion between personality and identity. So that we make it clear, we talk about the OCEAN model per se, if you want to remember it as an acronym, and you'll listen about what every letter represents in the discussion and the explanation on that. So without taking much of your time, let's move on to our discussion with Professor Theo Klimstra. If I ask you point blank that what is your general idea of identity, like what does it comprise of, or how do you see it? So how would you describe it as?
Yeah, it's, well, then I just go with one of the classic definitions. It's kind of a set of ideals, goals, identifications. Complex set that is constantly, it's a work in progress. Even though I'm an identity researcher, I still find out new things about myself. And of course, my ideals and my identifications might also change slightly. Like in the Netherlands, I wasn't an immigrant. Here I am. So it's a different identification and it becomes part of my identity. So that's really a set of goals, identifications, ideals.
How would you then differentiate it with personality, for example? Do you see any difference?
Part of my other research is on personality. A lot of what we do in personality psychology it got a little broader over the years, but personality psychologists would see identity as part of personality, but a lot of personality research is also focused on something called Big Five, for example. These broad characteristics is more that describe your character more, rather than your ideals, your identifications, and so on.
But the Big Five model in general is just like one Freudian Big Five model, right?
You could more or less trace it back to there is some Freudian dimensions in there, especially neuroticism, extroversion to a certain degree, although it's a little different than what it used to be, how it used to be defined. But it's really a modern day version, with other influences in there as well. It's very much based on words in the language that could describe a person. And then they did all kinds of analyses to limit the number of attributes that people could be described with, and then eventually they came up with like five broad ones. And there's still some disagreement on whether those five are really the best ones to describe people with. Okay. In the English language it works reasonably well. Six also works, but others say 22 or 23 characteristics might be better, but it also depends on like at what level of specificity do you want to compare people.
Since everyone in our listening audience might be aware about them, can you quickly tell us what are those five characteristics which you're referring to with Big Five?
I already referred to neuroticism. So how stress sensitive you are, basically. Also a tendency towards more negative mood. Then there's extroversion, positive emotionality in there. So frequently experiencing positive emotions, but also just liking, wanting to interact with others, being outgoing, being socially dominant is also part of it. And then there's openness to experience. So just doing new things, like even just going to a restaurant and then picking the dish that you don't know, that kind of thing. Just so open-mindedness, basically. Mm-hmm. And then agreeableness, which is, has to do with how friendly and helpful you are to other people, but also how easy you go along with opinions of others. So it has a little bit to do with that as well. And then there's a conscientiousness, which is, how goal-oriented you are, to what degree you make plans moving forward, and that kind of thing.
Okay.
I think before we sort of delve into some of the stories the people we talk to about their own identity and sort of go deeper into those stories, I wonder, over the years, how did you saw changing your identity? And what do you think are some of the factors which determine like big shift in someone's identity?
When I was an undergrad master's student, there wasn't really a distinction between that back then in the Netherlands, but either way, I was in developmental psychology. Like many psychology students more generally, I wanted to become a clinician. Back then I was socially really young, you could say. Like, I wasn't really ready for doing that. So I did an internship, and then I kind of got basically stuck. I just knew, that it wasn't going to work out for me back then. So it was like my first sort of bigger identity crisis, you could say. What am I going to do now? But in the back of my head, I also had this idea, like, I'm actually pretty good. I like research. I'm probably pretty good at it. I didn't quite know yet because I hadn't tried it as much. And then I started getting into research, and then I found out that, I loved it a lot and I was good at it. So there was quite an identity shift there, like more like a career identity wise. As I moved forward, I was very much into research, but I was like, to get a little bit back to personality, I was an introvert. I was shy. Mm-hmm. And then at some point in academia, you have to teach, right? So that's shyness, teaching, that's not a great combination. Right. So that was a little bit of gave me some anxiety, but then at some point I found out how much fun it actually really is to teach, especially if you can teach about, when I could teach about my own topics, like identity, like personality. I was actually in an intensive program sponsored by the Erasmus Foundation. So it's basically the European Union. We had students from all over Europe in there. I was teaching in a small scale class, and there I really found out, like, if I'm just myself while I'm teaching, it's actually really fun, and it doesn't make me as nervous. So again, an identity shift where I found out that I actually like teaching. And that part also just kept on growing over time, and now I'm a full-time lecturer. So partly related to another identity kind of shift in my career identity that I had a couple of years ago, because like before I was doing more research. I was an associate professor, so I was on a research grant, had a lot of research time, but what I really found out is that I love research and I want to do it part of the year, but I get more immediate gratification, so to say, from standing in front of a classroom and actually talking to students, because especially with identity research, you kind of want to have direct contact with students because they're constantly working on their identity, and it's been super nice for me over the last couple of years. So that's mostly my career identity, but perhaps you were also looking for some other aspects.
Yeah, I think my question was in general more focused on personal identity, like personal shift in an identity. I guess since that's sort of the topic we are covering here, and I'm curious. I think one part of it you already mentioned, right? Like your Frisian identity getting like tapped upon the more you moved on in your life, getting out of this region to like the middle of Netherlands itself was a big shift. And I feel like now you're living in an entirely different continent. It is maybe even stronger to not just this Frisian identity, maybe even your Dutch identity or your European identity. But besides that, is there other like personal identity shifts which you observed over the years? And more importantly, what do you think sort of leads to your identity shift and could be, which maybe other people can also relate to it, why they might experience identity shift in themselves as well?
Yeah, so absolutely. So, academics, we frequently go to conferences, and at one of those conferences, I actually met the person who would then later, currently is my wife. Partly because of that, I also started going here a lot. So that also probably affected my career decisions. And I also obviously just started describing myself differently, no longer as a single person, but more as a married person. Partly because I was more exposed to this culture over here. Like in the Netherlands, especially in academia, there's just a lot of white people, especially at the universities where I was working. So I really never actually really thought of myself as a white person until I moved to the US, because everybody around me was white. So why would I see that as a defining characteristic? Right. But now that I'm here at Tufts, and also here in the neighborhood, a lot of our neighbors aren't white. A lot of our students aren't white. And that led to a shift to seeing my racial identity as a more defining characteristic, and also my gender identity. Yeah, through conversations with my wife, through research as well. Seeing my own privilege, for example, and reflecting on that has also been something that has become more prominent. Also, partly because of I wouldn't say societal change, but some of the events of recent years, like more attention towards the racial hierarchies that are a part of our society. And it made me reflect a lot more on that as well. So that has definitely been something that has been added to my identity. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One common thing that I was it just occurred to me while listening to all your answers, and I'm assuming that should be true for many, is that even when you talked about your idea with your cultural background, that aspect of your identity came when you moved away from your place where you're doing bachelor's and master's or your home ground, then when you saw different races, then that became, being white became a part of your identity. And even in your professional career that you talked about, you said that an identity crisis led to you understanding that, okay, maybe clinical psychology is not your thing. In all of these things, one, the common denominator being that there was always an event that put stark contrast between what was there and what is to be, even when you were from a bachelor to becoming a married person now. So then there is a contrast, which is very apparent and which is very bigger in size and macro in nature, because you have to face it every day to day. So now that helped you, let's say, attach more with that aspect of your identity. I'll loop back a bit more, and I'm not sure if there is any answer to this question, but even when we loosely use the word identity crisis, which all of us do every once in a while, we never really use the word personality crisis. Is there a pragmatic way to identify if the struggle that a person is going through is due to a challenge towards the identity of the person, or is towards just a personality aspect of the thing? Is there some practical way to clarify or identify that, whether it's an identity issue or a personality issue?
That's a great question, actually. Part of why we don't necessarily talk that frequently about a personality crisis is also related to the way personality has been described traditionally. Traditionally, it has been described as something very stable. Well, we actually know that it's relatively stable, but it's really not like perfectly set in stone in any way. So maybe we should consider using something like personality crisis. What we often see in research, I talked about my identity change through, basically life transitions, right? So life events, just finding out things about myself. Some of them were major life events, some somewhat less major life events. What we know from personality research as well is that personality can also change, at least temporarily, because of what happens to us. Although I do have to say, and this is something we as personality psychologists do not necessarily fully understand yet, is how much of that personality stability is really due to the person, or whether it's just that we kind of stay more or less the same person because we're in a stable environment. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit tricky, because we have a lot of personality research, just like a lot of research in the social sciences more generally, has been done on white upper middle class people who are in relatively stable environments. So yeah, could be very different if we would more successfully diversify our samples. And well, being at that conference 2 weeks ago makes me very optimistic that we're on our way to do that. So we will know more in a couple of years, I think.
So for the pragmatic part, you say that we don't really have an answer as of now to differentiate between these two.
You could say that like it's easier to change your ideals. It's not that easy, but like it's easier to add certain identifications to, for example, now that I'm suddenly an immigrant, that's just something that's added to how I describe myself, whereas like it's just like the way we ourselves also think about our personalities makes it less likely that I would suddenly describe myself as a disagreeable person, whereas like first I describe myself as an agreeable person.
Interesting.
Okay. Today we want to talk about more, in lack of better word, not necessarily tough identities. So not that any identity is tough are the ones we are talking, but of course, certain aspects of identity can be quote unquote tough just because of the surroundings or the way of your growing up or the way you are born with a certain religion or race, etc., or sexuality, gender, whatever. But today we are talking more about sort of when, because a lot of us don't necessarily associate to one identity strongly, and what happens in those cases. And to start with, I'm going to play a clip from Hannes, who is from Germany, a working profession. And let's hear his take on how he defines his identity.
Yeah, I think I myself identify the most over my professional work environment. I think, as you said, because I'm not religious, I don't really have special hobbies, special things I do. So that's why probably I'm more focused on that part. Yeah, I don't have kids, I don't have family yet. So I think if that comes into play, it also can change.
Of course.
But right now I'm more oriented on my profession, and I would also say I'm mostly identifying by that.
Okay, so the stage is all yours. What's any initial reactions?
This is, I think, pretty common. Like if you don't necessarily stand out from your environment in terms of perhaps ethnicity, I don't know whether that was the case here, perhaps regarding gender, perhaps regarding so some of the other identities that we discussed, like sexual identity, gender identity. Then especially, but also if you do have all these other identities, professional identity can of course be very important, but especially like if you don't have all of that, then this might stand out even more. And I don't know how old Hannes is.
So Hannes is about 28. He's from Germany and white male.
Well, makes a lot of sense. Especially in your late 20s, early 30s, even up till your 40s. But especially late 20s, early 30s, you're trying to establish a career, and it's important, of course, as well to try and establish this career. Society kind of expects you to do it as well, at least in Western societies. It's around that age that you kind of have, that you're kind of expected to do that. So there's societal pressure to do that as well. And that can make a professional identity very salient, put it in the foreground. And I can also relate to this. Like when I was 28 years old, let's see, where was I? Oh, I was in Belgium, actually. So I lived in Belgium for 2 years. I was doing a postdoc, very much focused on my career as well. Also single, also in a, well, I stood out a little bit because I was from the Netherlands, and in Belgium, they, well, in that part of Belgium where I was, they speak Dutch, but slightly different Dutch. So I did stand out a little bit, but still, yeah, I was very much focused on my professional identity as well. So that's, yeah, it's pretty common around that, yeah, age, I would say.
I have a small follow-up on that. Normally, a word is being thrown around quite a lot when it comes to people associating themselves with, like, okay, I'm focused on my work, which is being workaholic or workaholism, right? Mm-hmm. So is being workaholic an association with your identity, or it's more like an expression of your personality in lack of any other thing left?
Yeah, so yeah, that's a complicated question. I guess it, yeah, it can all happen in multiple ways. You can have a very strong professional identity. You can really feel like, well, for example, yeah, if you look at me, like, I'm yeah, you might strongly feel like you're a professor, for example, but also still feel, yeah, like value the things you do in the time outside of work and kind of strictly stick to whatever the working hours are, but still feel very connected to your job. Then you would have a strong professional identity. So, but then it wouldn't necessarily go together with, yeah, workaholism. but obviously, yeah, when you really love your job, it can also partly become, yeah, the kind of thing you love to do outside of working hours. I had that as well with, like, with my research. I was just very curious about finding out stuff about identity, about personality. And then, yeah, sometimes I just, yeah, sacrificed quite a bit of weekends on whatever I happened to be interested in, just because I was interested in it, not because somebody else expected me to do it. And yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, then yeah, it's yeah, you do. Yeah, I identified very strongly as a researcher, as an identity researcher, and then it also takes a lot of time. But yeah, sometimes perhaps, like, when you do that a lot, when you sacrifice a lot of weekends, yeah, then, like, that professional identity can become a very large part of who you are more generally. Because yeah, if you don't have time left to do anything else. You just also don't have that much time left to develop identities there, unless you do it at work as well, of course, as well, because, yeah.
Yeah, I think in the context of this clip, it's also important to mention, because in our conversation, he also mentions that for him, he didn't had, as he also says in the clip, I think, didn't had this strong hobbies. He has hobbies, of course, but none of it's not like one hobby he's doing, right?
Yeah,
Or same thing with religion or things like that, where it was nothing strong coming out. And the most of the time he was spending was with professional things. And especially for him, he also mentions that he likes his job a lot. And he also, that's what he's also doing in his free time. So he's a programmer, so he likes to have side projects and things. So he's also spending a lot of time doing that. And that's why he said, as you said, relates to it a lot more. If someone asks about identity, that's the first thing comes to his mind.
Yeah. And it makes a lot of sense. And it's really nice, actually, if you do something you like, that's beautiful. Like, I think everybody kind of wants that, because, like, yeah, with a full-time job, you spend so much of your week on it. Well, in this case, he spends even more than a full-time, the full-time hours on it. But, like, yeah, that's beautiful. I think if you find something that you really like, that you can really identify with. Yeah, you could call it workaholism, but, like, it's, if you really love it and if you do it because you love it, it's not the kind of workaholism that will lead to burnout or anything, because it's comes from this, like, kind of intrinsic motivation. So that's it's really a good thing, I think. Yeah,
I think workaholism in general has a negative connotation, I feel like, because workaholism comes from this negative side of, oh, you're overworking. And I guess in the example of identity with Hannes or Theo, what you gave, it's more like positive association with professional identity. I was very curious, do you think that people tend to, and this more fundamental question of how people build their identities, because identity has word or letter I in it. So it's about you. That's what we also talked about before. So I wonder that in a lack of able to find something, I don't know, which differentiate them as could be the case of many people, then people mm-hmm. try to necessarily find something, be it with a hobby or be it with work or things like that. And then it feels like they're trying to find a purpose almost in life. So does yeah. identity has a strong correlation with purpose in lives? Do they all go hand in hand together?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So part of identity research, especially narrative identity research, so what you do there is you ask people to tell their life stories, tell about, like, for example, crucial turning points, high points, low points, and how they make make meaning out of that. That's literally what you study. One of the things you study, if you study or at least what a lot of narrative identity researchers study. So that's absolutely. Meaning making is very important. That's kind of the particular topic that you make meaning out, or the particular life domain that you make meaning out, that tells us something about your identity. So it's directly related to identity.
Maybe we should also go towards the next click. You want to set some context?
It's a bit of a change of gear from mm-hmm. our previous discussion. It's a bit more mm-hmm. about how do you even think about identity of your future generation, especially when that identity can be very different from who you are yourself. So let's listen to a clip of it. And for the context, so the person we are talking to he's German in this setting, and the partner he's discussing about, she's also German citizen. Of course, she grew up here, but mm-hmm. she is from Vietnamese background.
Okay.
In future, you are going to marry someone who looks different, right? Who is coming from not, of course, I'm not saying she's not privileged, but compared to you in a broader sense, and that will also be reflected in your children, maybe, can be. Is that also something you think about? Is that something, and also maybe just discussion with your partner, that changed something within you, how you see yourself or your identity?
Yeah, that's actually a quite interesting thing to talk about, because because for example, we are marrying this year, mm-hmm. and I have a really strong German name, and mm-hmm. she has a Vietnamese name, mm-hmm. and of course we were talking about who or which name we should take, like mm-hmm. each partner, or mm-hmm. if we should stay with our own names, mm-hmm. and because of course of your name, of your surname, you are always, if somebody is not able to see a picture of you and reads your name, he will judge you. Not good or bad, but he will say this guy is probably German, or he's right. not German, and right. that has some effects, it can have.
For sure.
And I was always asking myself, okay, if I have this foreign name, what will change? Will there be changes or not? So, and also for her, if she has now a German surname, how does it affect her? And I think that's the most interesting part. Yeah, as you told about the children, because they will look half Vietnamese, half German or Western, right. and it also affects them on how, if they have a German name, also their first name. If right. it's German or not,
right.
and but that's still an ongoing process since we don't have kids yet. But yeah. I was always thinking about that, and I think it's really hard. So I would say if the children is more looking Vietnamese, a Vietnamese name is just better, because it kind of fits better the mental model of the people. You know what I mean? Like,
that's interesting.
Read a name, have some model in mind, and if that fits together, maybe it feels better for people than the other way around.
Right.
If it conflicts their mental model of people. Right. Because I also sometimes we're coming across that issue that there was, for example, a colleague of mine, she has a German name, but she's not German. She also doesn't look German. And when I read her name, I was expecting, because it was new in the company, I was expecting to have, a German coworker, right? But then it turns out she's not at all fitting in my mental model of her, how she looks like, how she behaves, how the working environment is, and everything else. And this kind of was really strange for me. But that's a normal process, I think. But if you can stick and be quite near to the mental model of other people, it can have an advantage, but I'm not sure. So it's just my thoughts about all that, and I don't really have really thought this all through. But it's just the things that come into your mind when you thinking of names of your children, and also surname of your partner when you get married and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I think before we get your opinion, I also wanted to, because it was very fascinating to me what he says at the end of perception of other people, like this concept of mental model. And I never thought about it. To be fair, I'm also in their journey of kids and stuff like that. I'm much far behind, I guess, at least mentally speaking. So I never even thought or considered any of that. But I'm wondering how much of these identities are already predetermined by our parents, for not just because of the situations like race or religion, etc., but also the perception of other people in the society.
So you're basically referring to your heritage. So perhaps because you're the son of whoever your parents are, people will expect you to be like your parents. Is that the kind of thing you're referring to?
No, but rather more what he was referring to, like the mental model. For example, when you read a name, then you expect the person to might look a certain way or behave a certain way. And for example, if people are deciding the name of a kid based on that, that can have an impact on the identity of this future human being. Right.
Of course. So if whether we want it or not, often when we read a name before we see somebody, we do have like some mental image of what the person is going to look like. Sometimes you've also got names that are in some cultures more for men, and in other cultures more for women, and then it's the other way around in the other culture, and then you expect a woman and then it's a man, or the other way around. And of course, then you get a little bit like, oh hey, what's going on here? You do have this little moment, because you do the way we go into situations is that we do have expectations before we go into situations. There's this there's a whole personality theories on that, like we build up our anticipation based on our previous experiences, and often so our mental representations are built based on our experiences. And if those experiences say for example, in this case, like a German person has this kind of German sounding name, Hannes, Jens, that kind of thing, for example, Heinz, to just name a couple of names. And it's a completely different name that doesn't sound very German, or what we think of as very German, then of course, that the expectation is a little bit violated. Same thing is if somebody has for example, also if I think of myself, if somebody has a very Dutch sounding name, for example, I have one colleague here who even has a Frisian last name, so I thought that might be a Frisian. Well, Definitely not. So in that sense, yeah, I had an experience like that as well. But
isn't then VR, because for example, if I experience something like that, or you experience something like that, mm-hmm. it's just you saw that, okay, I can take an example of what I experienced. Okay, I thought this person's name sound more for a guy. Then I saw this mm-hmm. person. It was a person turned out to be a girl. And then yeah. it's a second, it takes a second, but then it's fine. But I guess yeah. in this case, when parents are thinking, especially for mixed kids, they are automatically defining a part of identity of this children before even the kid is born, or when the kid cannot even define the identity itself, right? So I don't want to take this instance out as a big thing. That's just normal. All of our parents define our identity in some way yeah. or the other. So I was wondering how much a part of our identity is already predetermined.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The situation that we both referred to, yeah, are the kind of thing where it's basically for 1 second, like, didn't expect that, and then you get over it. It's of course, yeah, with certain names or certain things that you are provided with by your parents. Yeah, that can have, yeah, depending on yeah how diverse also the society, of course, is, and how much there are, for example, stereotypes about certain names, certain last names, and the ethnic groups, for example, associated with that. Mm. Yeah, then it can have an impact on how that person is perceived, especially if those are very strong stereotypes. So in that sense, the kind of choices that he referred to, could potentially have an impact on how you are treated, and the way people treat you affects your identity. So in that sense, yes, I would agree with you. That's to a certain degree, the choices that our parents make can affect our identities. Extent to which they can affect our identities, again, depends on context.
Interesting. On another aspect of it, we're talking about, and Hannes puts the name as mental models that people have of others. That's essentially stereotype. Has there ever been a study as to when or what type of stereotypes do children or adolescents starts developing at certain age groups?
There are, for example, there is research on early gender stereotypes. There's also on racial stereotypes. Racial stereotypes come a little better later than gender stereotypes, because especially at least from what is known from research, it might not be entirely accurate. But there's also just more research on early gender stereotypes. But those can kick in pretty early because we so consistently reinforce those stereotypes as well. We already start painting the rooms in a certain colors, give certain toys to children of one gender, but not the other gender. Yeah. Certain behaviors are more accepted and so on. So gender stereotypes kick in pretty early. So that's
The more I think and talk about identity, the more I realize how parenting is so critical and so hard that you are defining so much of identity in so many cases. And based on what you are introducing at a very early age can have such a lasting effect for some people, probably lifetime in some cases.
Yeah. It's also where you move as a parent, the kind of job that you have as a parent might even affect the identity of your child. Are you the kid of that family living in a regular street, or are you the kid of that family living on the hill in the town? They can all have, in one way or another, it can have an effect. Even the car that you drive, as we are, kind of brings us back to financial identity, the money part as well. That can have an effect on how you are treated, depending on how the people around you react to certain to those kind of attributes.
It could also shape how you start dealing things in general, right? Because let's say your parents moved a lot when you were child or toddler and then adolescent, then there is a good possibility that you see every relationship as temporary.
That's the other thing. Yes. Yeah. So do you see friendships as like a stable lasting thing or not? Well, yeah. That also depends on how much your parents move around perhaps. And then of course, there's always possibilities to keep on holding on to friendships even if you move far away, but it can be a little bit more challenging. So that can feed into how you relate to other people, or it doesn't have to, but it could. So there is a chance that it happens. And also even there's one of the students actually I'm working with here, she moved around a lot, and it kind of led to an interest of her with national identity basically, because she feels like she's from nowhere because she just moved around from one country to the other. And she has this somewhat sense of ethnic identity because her parents are they were both born in India, but yes, she lived in a lot of different countries, and she was really wondering, because there's more international students here in the Boston area who have similar experiences, what does that do to your identity? So to a certain degree, so we know a little bit about from people moving from one country to the next, because that's more common, but we don't know that much about people moving from across a lot of countries, because maybe national identity becomes something that you just don't really have.
True. Dialing back one step behind back, we started with stereotypes, this small discussion. I have an understanding of it, I'll admit upfront, but I still want to know your opinion on that. As to, do you consider that stereotypes inherently have a good or a bad nature?
Well, there can be positive stereotypes, like because of like what you look like or what your gender is or whatever. To give a personal one. So I was a psychology student and developmental psychology. So mostly working with children and adolescents. As a guy, I kind of stood out. And we had all of these statistics courses. And I really wasn't the best in the statistics courses at first, but because of the stereotypes, and it's, I guess, sort of a positive stereotype about at least like from my perspective, men are good at statistics. A lot of people ask me questions about statistics, so I got more practice, and therefore I got to be better at statistics, and now I'm teaching courses in statistics. So you could say that's sort of a positive stereotype. On the other hand, of course, there's always the other side of that stereotype, is that like apparently, because most of the students who asked me for statistics advice were actually women, that there might also be this idea on the other end, that they thought they were not as good at statistics at me, even though their grades were better, just because of the kind of stereotypes that are around in Western society. So I would say it's kind of always hard to say like if something's good or bad. I would more say that those kind of stereotypes usually turn out to be good for one group and not so good for another group. Like there's often like
indeed
two sides to the same coin. So that's
I mean, in general, I think stereotypes are like weird, and I feel like especially I think maybe you have experienced that as well. Once you especially move abroad, they get highlighted a lot more, as we were discussing last time as well, right? Then you are getting put in a boxes, which is kind of easy as well, I guess, for our mental capacity to process something fast. Oh, you're Indian, you look a certain way, you act a certain way. And the moment you don't, it kind of like this moment of, wait a second, you eat beef, you're Indian, just as a stereotypical example. Like I got this look a lot in the beginning, for example.
Interesting. No, but if correct me if I'm wrong, Theo, but I know you study developmental psychology, but evolutionary psychology gives advantages of stereotypes because that's how help people form smaller groups, right? Like, I'm not sure if you've gone through that.
It's, well, so one thing that stereotypes do, like if they're, I mean, that there is a certain accuracy to stereotypes. The problem is that like they appear, that they work at a group level that just don't work at an individual level. So they might apply like one group might be more like that. And, but like not every individual in that group is more like that. And the reason why that one in the why that group is different from the other group might not be like the kind of things that come up in the stereotype.
Yeah,
might be like a deeper reason there. But yet, are there evolutionary advantages? Well, one thing is that like it saves mental energy to think like that. You can you can make more rapid decisions, but whether those decisions are accurate, that's very debatable. So that's
No, but you said it rightly, and I read it at one of the places as well, and I think that would conclude nicely with the discussion of stereotype as well, which is, I read this definition somewhere, and I'm a stickler for definitions, I guess, in general too, which is stereotypes are nothing but something which are statistically correct but not universally valid. So as long as we keep that in mind, it has no good or bad to it inherently.
I mean,
yeah, no, so you, if you have more neutral ones, like for example, here, like I'm from Europe, I'm so I'm from the Netherlands. So if somebody would walk up to me in a bar and there would be a soccer game on, then they might assume like, and I say that I'm from the Netherlands, and then they might assume like, oh, he's probably actually watching that soccer game. And that's okay, that's the kind of stereotype that's kind of okay and fun. It's pretty neutral. The problem is that it's kind of easily gets into all kinds of not so great things that can lead to job selection or not being selected for a job, because there are a lot of studies showing that if you apply with a certain last name, well, fortunately that is like being addressed now, but like for a long time, you just had like less of a chance of getting invited for a job interview if you had a certain last name that didn't look local or whatever. So that's,
I mean,
that's where it becomes damaging.
Just to conclude with, I mean, I think it's kind of now more of a positive thing. I mean, like if you're Indian, especially if you're a guy, like in tech, you are considered one of ours, you know? So it's like a very positive thing, which is good. I mean, there's a good salary and life is pretty chill, to be honest, but it is actually a very positive stereotype, but it's not true for a lot of other cultures, unfortunately. On the topic of stereotypes, I think one of the topics which is considered very stereotypical more and more now is the religion, topic of religion, because some people tend to be, it's a very big spectrum, right? Like from completely against religion and God to on the other end of really everything is about religion. So now this this clip is more about when religion is not a thing, how do you look the religious identity?
It didn't play a big role because, as I said, my parents are not really religious, and also my one side of my family, also my grandpa and grandma from the other side are not religious at all. Only that one from the other side, my grandpa, he's quite
And did they try to, like the grandparents try to taught you some things? I don't know, like especially because I think, for example, a lot of times people, at least in my experience, think about God when in settings like you were, where you, it's not a everyday topic, religion is not a thing except like two times a year going to church, is when something is really bad happening or something very good is happening. So for example, if you are having a wedding, then maybe people want to go and get married in the church and get the blessing of God, etc. but especially when something is really bad happening, then people tend to hold on to something, right? And that's where religion and God becomes interesting. So I wonder, when you were growing up, was there a conversation where your, I don't know, parents were telling you something about, okay, if something is wrong is happening, then what can you do? Or was it just not a thing, for example, in your family?
I think it wasn't a thing in my family. So, and but I think also because in my family, we were quite lucky with a lot of things, because all my grandparents, all four of them, are still alive. So really less people died.
Right.
At least in the time I know.
Sure.
In my family, of course, before me, but in the time I'm living, nothing really mature happened to my family. So maybe that's also why we were never really talking about that.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think that also is relevant to mention in the conversation where this might be coming from. Because, and I wonder, how do you see it now, especially going ahead and future, for example, if you, I don't know if you have a family or something, then if something is bad is happening, do you think then you are thinking, oh, there is something I want to hold on to? Or you are more like, I don't believe it in at all, and I'm gonna just face however the situation is. What's your first thought about that?
Yeah, I'm in general a quite rational guy, so since I'm also not really practicing religion or anything, I always try to attribute certain things to real world reason.
Okay.
And so I would also teach that, I think, to my kids, to look for how can certain things happen. And of course, sometimes it's just luck or no luck, right? So I don't really think but I'm not sure yet, so I don't have kids, so maybe it also happens and evolves, but right now I'm more rational and trying to explain things and so on.
Yeah, I think it would be, I thought one of the reasons I played this clip was, I think maybe especially coming from Netherlands, I think maybe you also have some personal opinion or experience on it as well. And I'm more than happy to hear it. The only question I would like to add on it is that if there is no religious involvement, let's say in terms of your identity, is there research which shows, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, that's an interesting question. So let me start with my own experiences. What he was talking about, like part of the my mom's side of the family was very not religious, more like a socialist background, so to say. And the other half was pretty conservative, actually, a Christian. So I grew up, I think we usually at least went to church like once a week, and then like later once every 2 weeks, and then later I didn't go at all anymore. So slowly fading away, basically, the religiousness. And then also when I started going into science, into academia, there's like, yeah, there were just like in the Netherlands, very few people in academia who believed in God or were religious. So yeah, there, what I actually mostly saw, because it's kind of recent that switch happened, at least for a lot of my colleagues, it was, they grew up religious and they then moved out of it. A lot of us were atheist, really like, religion doesn't work for me at all. And like almost kind of like that almost kind of became a faith. I personally am a little bit, more nuanced now. I see the advantages as well. I don't necessarily believe in a God, but I also, both with the existence and the non-existence of a God, I think it's about philosophical problems, because you're always stuck with this, where did it all start and why? And where is this, this starting point? But that's probably just because we humans like to think in terms of starting points. But anyway, for this guy, it just sounded like religion just had never really been a thing in his life. He didn't really seem against it. He just like it was never a thing. And that can of course be very very true. And it's also kind of perhaps even nice, you could say, like that's a part of your identity that you don't have to figure out. It's just not really there. It's kind of what you could say an unexamined identity. And having that kind of unexamined identity, especially could be with religion, could be with ethnic identity as well. If you grow up in a white, very white area, or as a Frisian in Friesland, surrounded by Frisians, it doesn't really, there's no point in calling yourself Frisian. Yeah. Or is you like to talk a little bit about how cool it is to be a Frisian, because we're a small group and we're very proud of it of ourselves, but like it's not really an identity. It's not really something that distinguishes you from the people around you. I could imagine that this like non-religious or religious as an almost being absent might have never been questioned for him. And therefore, it never really became a strong part of his identity. Also not like, being non-religious also didn't become a strong part of his identity. Because I could imagine that in southern Germany or whichever part of Germany he's from, it might be much like in the Netherlands that, there is just fewer people going to church. And
I guess it's interesting to give a more context, because so he's from southern Germany, and he grew up in countryside where he also followed like certain protocols of religion, because like when you're growing up as a Catholic, he grew up in a Catholic society, so you are doing certain things up to a certain point. Like I think he told me until 9th standard or something, and then you reach a certain point where to completely become a Catholic, you do certain extra things. So, so he actually was in this environment where no one was questioning it, because everyone was. I mean, southern Germany still is actually Christian and conservative. He also mentions that his parents were never talking about religion at home. So they were sort of believing in things, but they never mentioned it. And I guess it relates to, again, parents maybe determining a part of identity.
If it never becomes a part of your system, so to say, like of the things that you should worry about or should think about, then it might become might be less likely to become a salient part of your identity, of course, unless you meet somebody who for whom it is important and who you interact with a lot, then it might suddenly at a later point in life become a salient part of it, of your identity, of your overall identity.
You used a very interesting choice of words. You said you don't have to worry about that part of identity. So does identity inheritedly involve some sort of worriness at your end, a lot of self-reflection? If there is not that, then would you not consider, purely from academic or research point of view, not an identity of someone because there is no
thought given to it?
Yeah, thought given to it.
That's a good question, actually. Good that you asked that. Good picking up on that. The way we look at identity and more general identity processes is through these processes of commitment and exploration. And there is the possibility to commit to a certain identity and then not really examine it. It's called sort of a foreclosed identity. technically, from a more philosophical viewpoint, you could say that that's not really an identity because you haven't really examined it. So you could say that, to get to the point what we call identity achievement, so that it really becomes part of who you are. Yeah, then you need to go through this process where you explore. And what we know about exploration, that it doesn't have to necessarily go together with worries or anything, but it can be a stressful experience. Mm-hmm. Like, it can also just be an experience of like, look at all these awesome options. I have to pick one of the awesome options, and I know I'm not gonna end up in a bad way if I pick one or the other, but I still have to choose. And then there's still a little bit of mental energy involved in it. But with a lot of the choices we make, there is a little bit more worry involved because it might be uncertainty. Like, if I choose for that option, what kind of options, what kind of chances, mm-hmm. what kind of opportunities do I leave behind? And that's where the worry comes in. And worry is associated with, self-reflection, or self-reflection can turn into worry rumination, as we call it. So that's why in some identity models there's also this ruminative exploration process. So because some people can get kind of stuck in this process of figuring out what choice to make, and then it becomes like rumination, worry. Ongoing work.
I see that more and more with religion, because I guess religion has a reverse problem, and a lot of religious people are going to hate me for that. But with religion, you have a lot of shitty options and you have to choose one of them if you want to be religious. So that's just my opinion.
So you might have certain values that make you not like want to be part of a certain religion, but then your family members might have very different values.
Oh yeah,
and then you might be in a conflict with them, and that's like basically having two bad options. Yeah. So yeah, and then yeah, that can of course go together with worries. So yeah.
Yeah, I am exactly on that boat. Mm-hmm. So on that topic, I think it would be nice to actually hear another experience about how I think most of us are in the when it comes to religious identity.
You were raised in what, like in a Polish background, and Poland is quite religious of a country. What has been your journey with religion in general? Are you religious?
Well, my parents never pushed me to be religious. They, like, we could explore whoever we wanted to be. They were very, very open. Like, their parenting, like, we were able to do whatever we wanted, which is nice and bad. I don't know how I would do it, but I don't feel like I'm a very religious person. Sometimes there are these moments where I think like, okay, God, please
help me.
Yeah, or like, if this is your way, it's okay, but just make sure you're watching over all of it. But I don't know if I believe that there is something bigger like out there, like independent of putting it into any specific religion now, like, because I feel like every religion has like this one belief that there is
something
bigger out there. So, and I don't know if I believe there is. I don't know, like the true answer is just I don't know. And I don't know if I believe or I don't know if I don't believe, like, but that's still something I need to figure out.
Yeah, I think that's most of us.
I think that's a great clip also, because it kind of highlights the question that you asked at the previous fragment, but that I didn't really answer yet, is like, yeah, does religion also have like or being religious or not religious, does it have advantages and disadvantages? And I think she highlights one big advantage. Like, if you're in a stressful situation, And you get the idea like, oh, there might be somebody up there or wherever looking after me. That's kind of a comforting thought, of course. Yeah. And beyond that, like being part of a religious community, there's also a lot of support coming from there. I often see that like if there's people with financial issues in the religious community, then other people from the religious community help out. So those kind of things, of course, do come with religion as well. And that doesn't necessarily have to be tied to religion, but that's one of the supportive functions that it could have. Mm-hmm. And this is a great example of like,
religion giving you an option. Religion giving you an opportunity to replace one unknown with a bigger unknown.
I guess,
I definitely think, and I had this conversation with several people, that I think what religion gives more than just something to hold on is to the community aspect. In most religion, there is a big communal aspect to it, some more than the other. And I feel like that keeps a lot of people also in religion, because there you are actually having real connection with real people based on something which you might not know, which is not necessarily tangible. Of course, the religious people say, no, God is tangible, but it's not necessarily proven. So it's not necessarily tangible, but you're relation with anyone in the community based on this are very tangible, and which is missing a lot of times, especially in the individualistic societies in the West, for example, especially if you're not religious person.
For example, my mom is still doing things for the church, even though she doesn't believe in God, but like she just kind of likes being part of that community. Mm-hmm. So that of course it can serve that function as well. I think, part of what was also interesting here is also, she said, like, there's all these options, and it's a little bit terrifying. I think that's also a good example of, difficult identity formation more generally can be Western individualistic societies, where you're perhaps less expected to go down a certain path, but where you do have all these options, that can be hard to navigate all of those options. If you have all of those options, it's a little bit of a luxury problem, of course, but it's still a problem. And there have been books about that, like The Tyranny of Choice. That's kind of that is a thing, of course. Like if there's too much to explore, things can become a little bit stressful, especially if you have the perception that like one choice is going to be that certain choices are potentially going to put you in a bad place. And it can of course feel pretty
more colloquially known as analysis paralysis.
Pretty much. That's pretty much what it is. Yeah.
I had this question, especially because with religion, I think one thing becomes easy that more often than not, people who are religious, they tend to say their good luck comes from their faith, meaning that if there is a good luck, it comes from God. When it comes from bad luck, that's based on human actions. Of course, I'm generalizing, that's how it is, right? I'm not sharing how I feel about it, but I just was curious that what is there any... not necessarily have to be research, but is there any connection from academic level or whatever, where we are tying luck with identity? Because a lot of things happen by coincidence, by luck, whatever you want to call it. And that's something very hard to pinpoint to when you don't have, especially religious faith, right? Then you don't have, you cannot say, oh, it's because of my God and my belief, and I prayed, and now that's why I am living in a certain country or making a certain amount of money, right? Then how do you define certain aspects of your identity, which you know are coming because you are lucky? People even says that, even Hannah says that he is lucky that everyone is very well in his family. That's why he never had to worry about the bad situation. So luck has a very important aspect in defining one identity. So I was curious if there are studies or correlation to it Or just your own thoughts on it, of course.
So we actually had like discussions about this already when I was a PhD student with the professor that was supervising me. He's got this like kind of very down to earth view on identity, where it's like, do we really make all of the choices that we think we make, or is it just like a little bit society deciding for us, and then later on we make up this, a story so it looks like we made that decision? So that's one view on it, and yeah, to a certain degree, of course, that does happen. So certain decisions I would not have taken if like some random events would not have happened. So for example, I happened to meet my wife here at a conference in 2011, and I didn't see her for over 4 years. Then I happened to meet her again, and then a year or so later, 1.5 years later, we were married. So there was some randomness involved, because like the chances of me meeting her at that kind of conference were kind of minimal. And that has influenced my life decisions, because I would have probably not applied to jobs in the US had it not been for that.
Mm-hmm. And that impacting your identity, because now you are Dutch, which was not reflected when you were living in Netherlands, right? And that's what I was wondering, if there is any research on that, because you would have lived in Netherlands, then you are maybe Frisian, but definitely being Dutch is normal, right? And now you are Dutch, you are European, and this immigrant part of identity is getting highlighted based on this super random event which happened in your life.
That's the interesting part. Yeah, so these random decisions can also, kind of launch identity processes. And the funny thing, of course, for me here is that, like, especially in some parts of the country, for example, where my parents-in-law live, Kentucky, that part of Kentucky, at least it's a suburban Louisville, is very white. So people see me, they would think that I'm from there, because I look a lot like the people from there. And then I start talking, and then they're like, oh, he's a little bit of an accent. And then even more fun is, my wife also speaks Dutch, so we can speak Dutch there. And then people are really confused, like, oh, this is they look like they're from here, but they speak a completely different language. I don't understand any of this. So all of that, can kind of enter the mix as well, because then people are going to react differently to you as well. But yeah, for me to be identified as an immigrant, that doesn't happen that much. I try to emphasize that I'm an immigrant, for example, in my classes as well. Also because like I don't understand certain aspects of this culture at the same level as people from here would. And I never will, because I wasn't born here. Things that seem normal to people from here are really not normal to me. You probably have the same experience in Germany. Mm-hmm. Yes, some of the things will always, and you'll never fully understand it, at least not in the same way as mm-hmm. people were, the people who grew up there were understand it. But yes, now I do have this more immigrant identity. I've got what else entered the picture? That I think more about my racial identity, because it's much more emphasized here. All of those aspects were aspects that I needed to explore after more regularly visiting the US first and then moving here.
So part of my question was also, are there any research going on this correlation of identity with luck and randomness in general?
Not that I'm aware of. The problem is also that it's really hard to define luck and randomness. That's where you get in trouble with scientific research. We always want this. You could, of course, do something on perceived luck, but So perceptions of luck, you could definitely measure that. I think that's more common in the decision-making literature, which oddly is kind of separate from the identity literature, even though identity is also all about decision-making. But hey, that's the kind of weirdness that we can get into because of being academics. But
Then I would say with that, I would like to thank you once again, not just for this episode, but for this three-part series. Hey guys, if you have reached this point in the episode, then thanks a lot for listening to the entire episode. We really hope that you find the episode informational as much as we did. Before you leave, just one small request. If you want to keep track of what we are releasing every week or want to know more about the additional content which we produce regularly, please follow us on our social media. Our Instagram is info_under_the_radar. On Twitter, we are @info_under_radar. We are also active on LinkedIn. That's also info_under_the_radar. That's it for now. Bye.